not a sprain or an itch.
Welcome to another edition of the Hey Doc Show. Harold Lasky is both the medical director and a physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, and will be your host for the next half hour. With him is his lovely wife Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT and X-ray tech. Together, they hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
I know that we would all like to hear of a home treatment for COVID-19, especially one that knocks out all the symptoms early and really decreases not only the morbidity of the disease, but the mortality or death rate as well. So I had to start this show with an article that was really front page on one of the medical websites this very week.
Its generic name is fluvoxamine, and its brand name is Luvox. It is used to treat depression, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorder.
This medication has been around for a long time, but it has been going through some high-quality clinical studies for treatment of COVID-19. But because it cannot be patented, it will almost certainly not be endorsed or promoted by any deep-pocketed pharmaceutical company. But does that stop us from mentioning it? No way. There's a good reason to have chosen this particular medication for testing with COVID-19.
It has anti-inflammatory, antiplatelet, and potentially antiviral activity, independent of its psychoactive properties.
The double-blind study done by Dr. Eric Lenz and colleagues showed benefit. Out of 152 participants enrolled, clinical deterioration occurred in 0 patients treated with fluvoxamine versus 6 patients, that's 8.3% of the volunteers, treated with placebo. Now that is considered a difference that was statistically significant.
The problem here is that this was a small study, so a tiny shift in outcomes from treatment groups would substantially change the conclusion.
After this trial was complete, there was an observational study showing that this group that received fluvoxamine had better outcomes than those who declined treatment. Treated group had 0 hospitalizations, while the other group had 6 out of 45 hospitalizations. Could the results be skewed with those choosing to continue with the fluvoxamine being just more health-seeking and therefore healthier than those who really declined continuing with the medication? It's possible.
But their results were enough to merit more research, which includes something called the Together trial in Canada and Brazil.
To participate in the study, the volunteers had to have several criteria, the first being they must have had symptoms onset within the previous 7 days. They also had to have a positive test for SARS-CoV-2, be older than 18, and have at least one risk factor for disease progression.
The group already published the negative results of their first study, showing that neither lopinavir, ritonavir, nor hydroxychloroquine prevented progression to hospitalization or death better than placebo.
Other medications were studied, including metformin and ivermectin. The metformin didn't do much of anything and has been dropped. The ivermectin did a bit more, but still nothing earth-shaking, and was dropped as well.
In this study of 1,480 randomized participants, fluvoxamine reduced the risk of disease progression by 29%.
So is this the treatment that's ready for prime time? No, but they're getting close. Both the University of Minnesota's COVID Out study and the NIH's Active 6 study include fluvoxamine for testing. So that was just some food for thought.
According to Anthony Fauci, MD, the United States could get the COVID-19 pandemic under control by the spring of 2022 if enough Americans become vaccinated.
So what does this mean exactly? Well, it is a big if, meaning that to get the pandemic under control by the spring of 2022, the overwhelming majority of the people in the United States need to be vaccinated or been infected with COVID and recovered. Isn't it funny how they define an unexact term with another similarly vague term?
What does overwhelming majority really means to Dr. Fauci? He also stated that those who have COVID-19 and recovered should still get the vaccine.
And although we have tried to find medical news that supplants the COVID-19 news, we're hard-pressed to do so. With the increasing number of cases due to the Delta variant, there is little else of note coming out of the medical news centers.
For example, the big item now is our preoccupation with how and who started the pandemic in the first place.
President Biden has seriously questioned the Chinese as they have been unwilling to give the rest of the world the information necessary to make actual scientific headway in this research. At this point, SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, is not considered to have been developed as a biological weapon, at least according to a report by the United States intelligence community.
Another document simply reveals that most of the intelligence agencies also believe the virus was not genetically engineered.
However, one agency believes it is likely that SARS-CoV-2 leaked from a laboratory that handles coronaviruses.
Nevertheless, several elements of the intelligence community and the National Intelligence Council feel that natural exposure to an animal with the virus was the most likely cause of the outbreak.
And now the U.S. intelligence community has given credence to the idea that the first human SARS-CoV-2 infection arose from an incident at the Wuhan Institute of Virology in China, which was once dismissed as a conspiracy theory. So far, the COVID-19 pandemic, which began in the city of Wuhan, China, in December 2019, has gone on to claim over 4.5 million lives worldwide.
The report still states that SARS-CoV-2 was not developed as a biological weapon. It just happened to end up looking like one. So, most of the agencies believe with low confidence that the virus was also not the result of genetic engineering.
However, two agencies judge that there is insufficient evidence either way. So far, this is as clear as mud. Maybe less clear, in fact. So are there more viable theories of the past in the epidemic that will help us in the future? There are two major alternative theories of how the pandemic began. Again, these are theories. First is something called the overspill theory, and the second is called the lab leak theory.
Let's start with the overkill theory. Experts have found viruses closely related to SARS-CoV-2 in horseshoe, bats, and pangolins.
However, genetic sequencing suggests the lineage of viruses that gave rise to SARS-CoV-2 has been circulating in bats for decades. Another study found the genetic adaptations that allowed the virus to jump from bats to humans occurred many years ago.
Taking these facts into account, the researchers concluded that the virus's transition to humans was relatively easy. So most virologists assume there was an intermediate host between bats and humans, but investigators have yet to determine its identity.
Could it be the pangolins? Never heard of pangolins? Or maybe you only heard of these mammals after the pandemic started. Well, pangolins are the most trafficked mammal in the world, in large part due to demand from Chinese consumers. And scientists, as we said, are pointing to these particularly peculiar creatures as a possible source of the coronavirus outbreak in China, where a temporary ban on all wildlife trade is now in force. Could this mean fresh hope for pangolins? Why are they so sought after anyway? And why, despite laws preventing their trade, have they been hunted to the point of almost extinction? However, the analysis was unable to determine the identity of a possible intermediate host. So for a while, the pangolins are let alone.
This is an animal that may or may not have been on sale at the Huanan wet market, where the virus could have caused an infection in the first human host.
So before you start accusing these animals of having started the pandemic, it's important to note that research did not detect SARS-CoV-2 in the pangolins, only a relative of the virus. The actual identity of the intermediate host is still uncertain. Now let's get back to the lab leak theory.
There was an unnamed source that stated that the intelligence community, as part of its investigation, sifted through a trove of genetic sequences of viruses linked to the Wuhan Institute of Virology.
Robert Gary, a virologist from Tulane University in New Orleans, said that the intelligence report failed to draw any firm confirmations or conclusions about the origin of the virus. In other words, still no culprit. This inconclusive report also implies they did not find a very similar sequence. If they had, it would suggest that researchers at the lab tweaked the sequence of an existing virus to create SARS-CoV-2.
So we're still in limbo concerning who is to blame for the epidemic. There is a lot of finger-pointing both ways and no ways.
One of the biggest and most unknown consequences of this virus is how it will affect individuals and society as a whole in the future, both near and far. According to a 2020 study, about 30% of people who recovered from severe SARS or MERS had long-term lung abnormalities. And a 2009 study found that 40% of people who survived SARS still experienced chronic fatigue about 3.5 years later on average.
But while SARS, MERS, and COVID-19 are caused by viruses from the same family, there are key differences among them, as the 2020 study highlights.
And because of these differences, we cannot really look at past history of these diseases to prophesy what happens or will happen in the future. Remember that most people who develop COVID-19 experience a mild or moderate illness that improves on its own. They do not even need a doctor.
Unfortunately, some people who have had a mild or moderate illness go on to develop lasting symptoms that can be severe even after they have recovered from the initial infection.
When these symptoms are prolonged, people often call it long COVID. People with mild or moderate COVID-19 often go on to report extreme fatigue, muscle weakness, a low-grade fever, trouble concentrating, lapses in memory, mood changes, trouble sleeping, headaches, even a sensation of pins and needles, diarrhea, vomiting, loss of taste and smell. That's one we've heard of in the past. A sore throat, difficulty swallowing, skin rashes, shortness of breath, chest pain, heart palpitations, and even the new onset of diabetes or high blood pressure. Have we left out any symptoms on that list?
These symptoms may last for weeks or months after the body has cleared the virus. The World Health Organization of WHO observes that 20% of the people aged 18 to 34 reported prolonged symptoms.
Also remember that around 10 to 15% of people who develop COVID-19 experience severe symptoms, and only 5% become critically ill. People with severe symptoms can also experience long COVID.
In addition, people with a more severe form of COVID may be more likely to experience complications. There can be long-term damage to the lungs.
This was shown in an August 2020 study 1 year ago that people with severe COVID-19 are often discharged with signs of pulmonary fibrosis, which is a kind of lung damage. In some people, it can cause long-term breathing difficulties.
The heart can be affected as well, with the heart muscle being the affected part. The researchers speculate that in some people, COVID-19 may also cause myocarditis or inflammation of the heart muscle.
Another study found that people with severe COVID-19 were more likely to experience neurological manifestations like dizziness, nerve pain, and impaired consciousness. And it's too early to really know just how long these symptoms can go on after the virus has left the body.
And how about the complications that occur from the treatment in hospital of those who were treated with ventilators?
These include chipped teeth, lacerated lips, tongue or throat, injured vocal cords, infection hypoxia, hypotension, even collapsed lungs and heart rhythm problems.
Also, there have been increases in stress, anxiety, depression, and sleep disturbances in response to the pandemic.
There are just so many factors after a long-term pandemic that affects us humans, such as the isolation and loneliness, difficulty working, or the loss of employment and financial struggles.
There is grief and bereavement, even in those that did not get the virus. It has affected everyone, from relatives to friends to acquaintances.
These could all cause psychological trauma or post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, even the testing can be a joke. According to an article in the British Medical Journal, false negatives are common among people with COVID-19. And this, coupled with a lack of access to testing in some areas, means that many people with long COVID do not receive medical attention.
So, whereas initially healthcare officials and physicians would only accept someone as having COVID if they had a positive COVID-19 test, now many recommended that doctors do not require positive test results in order to diagnose chronic COVID-19 symptoms.
There are now even healthcare centers in the United States and elsewhere that have been set up as post-COVID clinics to help people recover from the illness. most of the focus in these clinics is to help people with breathing and rebuilding muscle strength, as well as providing psychological care for people with anxiety or depression.
And of course, some organizations have developed online tools to provide people with information and guidance as they recover from COVID-19.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. Dr. Lasky has been the director and physician at the care center for over 34 years. They are located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection, between the Tulsa Welding School and the old Pottsburg Post Office. They will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Dr. Lasky and Carmen are proud to welcome Dr. Pollan, a board-certified pain management physician, to the practice. The office emphasizes the treatment of chronic pain. They also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any question about Southside Medical Center, please call their office at 641-4411. That's Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care.
With many already telling us that COVID will be part of our lives for months to come, and maybe even years, the fact that there is so much unknown, that this alone puts the fear in many people. With so much time on our hands, during the pandemic, many people have reached out to the internet to seek resolution to many healthcare needs, especially since it was difficult to even see your physician during the pandemic.
And there have been many articles written, some true but most false, concerning the benefits of apple cider vinegar.
So we thought that this is a good time to go over these and see just which ones can be helpful, which ones are useless, and which ones can actually be harmful. For example, no vinegar, including apple cider, has been found in studies to significantly alter or prevent diabetes. Vinegar is simply acetic acid, sometimes with additional flavorings. But some studies have shown that acetic acid can be useful as one tool in helping people lower blood sugar. Now, a 2019 randomized clinical trial found a 10-point decrease in fasting glucose concentrations if they used 2 spoons of vinegar in a glass of water twice a day.
It worked best in those with pre-diabetes, and it could be that this is the group that could benefit the most.
And it's not just apple cider. The anti-glycemic response can be induced by any sort of vinegar. Red and white wine vinegars, pomegranate vinegar, or even plain white distilled vinegar.
The study had one caveat. The vinegar only worked in the presence of a starch. Apparently, the acetic acid blocks the absorption of starch, so if the volunteers ate a starch and add vinegar, blood glucose went down.
But if people simply drink sugar water and add vinegar, nothing happens. You also have to remember that if you're taking a diabetes drug, the vinegar could amplify the effects of your medications, so you might have to adjust your dosage. Well, can vinegar help with weight loss? Many people are great proponents of this theory.
A correctly cited study was done with 175 heavy but otherwise healthy Japanese subjects who were part of a 12-week treatment plan that produced lower body weight, body mass index, visceral fat, waist measurements, and triglyceride levels.
But the facts show something different. People just didn't really lose that much weight with only a 2 to 4 pound loss in 3 months over a placebo. That's only a third of a pound a week.
You have probably heard that the best way to consume apple cider vinegar is on your salad, especially if you drink lots of water with it. Oh, and by the way, exercise along with the new addition of the vinegar in order to lose weight.
Kind of sounded more to me like the tale of stone soup. Haven't heard of it? Well, you know, it's the story about some soldiers who come to a small European town very hungry, but none of the villagers will give them anything to eat. So they get a big cauldron, fill it with water, and start to boil the water. Then, in front of all the curious town folk, they begin adding carefully chosen rocks to the water, and they called it stone soup. The townspeople were curious, of course, and they saw one soldier taste it, and to his delight, savored the flavor. Then he moaned, saying, "It's delicious, but we could use this and share it with the townsfolk if only we had a few potatoes to add for the flavor." One of the town's farmers quickly brought some potatoes. "Thank you, kind sir," said the soldiers. "That will make it taste much better." Pretty soon they set out a cry for even more vegetables to add to the flavor. The boiling water was a delicious vegetable soup after a while. And then somebody brought some lamb, and the soup became a stew. And it was thus that stone soup became famous.
So is it really the vinegar that was helping people lose weight, or was it the additional exercise and added water that filled the people, that may one only assume that it was the apple cider vinegar that was the reason the people were losing weight?
Remember that sometimes people get really excited to try something new, and then their other behaviors change, including all those other things that can help as well. But then we need to be careful, as it has been shown that vinegar can erode tooth enamel. And vinegar has been used for centuries to preserve food items such as pickles and pig's feet. And it is now becoming popular as a natural preservative in processed meat and poultry items as well.
Mosan pickling uses 5% distilled white vinegar because it doesn't affect the color of the vegetables or fruits. But apple cider vinegar is a popular choice because of its mellow, fruity flavor. You do need to remember that apple cider vinegar does make most fruits and veggies dark.
Remember that vinegar can change the taste and smell of many foods, and thus with its limited antimicrobial efficacy may not be what you want in or on your foods. Apple cider vinegar is good to ease the sting of itch of bug bites. So if you have a lot of bites, put 2 cups in a full tub of water and soak. It, well, may help with your itching.
The internet also touts apple cider vinegar as a treatment for skin infections and acne, a way to fight lice and dandruff, and as a natural wart remover or an anti-aging treatment. The truth is that it will dry out a pimple, but it's not an anti-aging method.
But don't turn to it to get rid of head lice or warts either. One study found vinegar to be the least effective natural method of eliminating lice. And as for warts, they're caused by a virus, so there really is no cure here. You can dab a dilute version of apple cider on a wart with a Q-tip, but it's only going to help remove the overlying dead skin.
Remember that most dermatologists would only recommend distilled white vinegar, as it's created to a standardized formulation of 5% acidity, while apple cider vinegar's strength may be unknown and actually cause burns.
And remember, don't use it full strength. It's best to dilute it.
Do not rely on apple cider or other vinegars to help sanitize or disinfect your home. A 1997 study showed that undiluted vinegar has some limited effect on E. coli and Salmonella.
However, a study conducted in the year 2000 showed no real impact against E. coli or Staph aureus. These are the common bacteria responsible for most skin and soft tissue infections. Well, I think that's enough for today. We'll leave you with a taste of some music that should, well, give you a better taste in your mouth than vinegar. Before we get to our ending music sample, I'd like to mention poetry. Now, I enjoy a very small number of poems, most of them ballads, so I decided to read just a few lines from one ballad that I remember. In fact, this particular ballad was once recorded by the country singer Johnny Cash. The entire poem is quite long, so I'll only read 2 stanzas, the initial and the final. The name of the poem is The Cremation of Sam McGee. Again, it's considered a ballad, which is simply a narrative poem, usually written in quatrains, which are 4-line stanzas, that use an A-B-C-B rhyme scheme. And here's the poem. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men that toil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake Lebarge when I cremated Sam McGee. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked. Then the door I opened wide, and there sat Sam, looking cool and calm in the heart of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile, you could see a mile, and he said, please close that door. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear you'll let in the cold and storm. And since I left Plumtree down in Tennessee, this is the first time I've been warm.
We would like you, our listeners, to know that Dr. Lasky is one of only a few physicians in the Jacksonville area that has been certified to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call their office at 641-4411. They have also set up a special website at www.compassionatecarejax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. Unfortunately, we have come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.